Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on how would Jesus vote for president right after this. You know, Charles Lyell was one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Now, Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe in Lyell's Principles of Geology don't even know who it was that originated them, but it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood can be strictly ruled out. Now, this process is called science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report. And it made that surprising statement, the sun is shrinking. And then the story went on to inform us that the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching this now for over 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. Now, if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And if we do the math and we go back 20 million years ago, the sun would be 93 million miles in diameter, and the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth, because that's how far it is from the Earth to the sun, 93 million miles. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Well, according to Lyell's Principles of Geology. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the extinction of the dinosaurs? Can you remember that one? They told us it happened 65 million years ago and wrote it up in all of those glossy books. Well, boys and girls, if 20 million years ago, the diameter of the sun was 93 million miles and it was touching the orbit of the Earth, and then 65 million years ago, the sun was even bigger than that and there wasn't any Earth and there wasn't any dinosaurs. Now, children, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. Now, that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of how would Jesus vote for president. We're in the presidential cycle here in the United States. And everybody is being propagandized constantly, practically 24 hours a day, about these candidates and running for president. There was 16 candidates, 8 on each side, that were originally running for president. Now they're down to just two or three on each side. And ultimately, there will be two candidates chosen. One Illuminati candidate for the Democrats, and one New World Order candidate for the Republicans. So we're going to have this choice. You can have the red death pill or the green death pill. And that's the way we vote here in the United States. So I thought, well, what would happen if Jesus was running for president, or if he wasn't running for president? Well, who would he support? Who would be the logical candidate for Jesus to vote for? Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, Mike Huckabee, he's a preacher, you know, Baptist preacher. Surely Jesus would vote for a Baptist preacher, don't you think? Or would he vote for reason, logic, and common sense, and vote for that representative from Texas? What's his name now? It's Ron Paul. Ron Paul. Ron Paul is the only guy running for president here in the United States that's not a communist. Well, not an out-and-out, open, dyed-in-the-wool communist. Reason I say that is because Ron Paul is advocating in his platform and in his speeches. He says, in his debates, he goes into the debate and says, hey, I think we ought to abolish the IRS. I think we ought to abolish the income tax. I think we ought to abolish the Federal Reserve System. I'm not sure where he stands on all of the issues out there. I'm not a Ron Paul fan. I'm not out here advocating that you vote for Ron Paul or Hillary or anybody else. I'm a reporter, not an advocate. But I can't help but watch the debates from time to time, you know, or listen to the little 30-second vignettes, you know, that they let us see on television. And so I listen to this guy Ron Paul and I said, my God, this guy can never be elected president. This is preposterous. This guy's not a communist. Yeah, you see, the second plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for a heavy progressive income tax, and this guy Paul wants to abolish it. And then I got to thinking, well, what would Jesus say if he was up there on the podium or in the debate, you know, and the moderator, Tim Russert or somebody, you know, says, hey, Mr. Jesus, how do you stand on the income tax? Mr. Paul over here wants to abolish it. What's your take on it? How would Jesus respond to the income tax? So I reported that to you the other day. Jesus believed in tithing. You know, he didn't think much of the income tax. He was a great tithe advocate. So I think Jesus would be right on the same side as Ron Paul on this income tax. How about the central bank? Well, Jesus said that man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And so back in the olden days, when some words were proceeding out of the mouth of God, God told us, thou shalt not steal. And then he added to that, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And the Federal Reserve puts out false weights and balances. So I put two and two together and figured Jesus would probably be opposed to the central bank, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, because it violates the Eighth Commandment. If you take a look at the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, they violate all of the 10 commandments. And if you take a look at the 10 commandments, they're the exact opposite to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, when Jesus was constantly advocating the 10 commandments. You know, contrary to public opinion and popular opinion, I'm just reporting to you that Jesus was constantly telling people about the Ten Commandments and advocating the Ten Commandments, and, you know, just over and over again. Now, Ron Paul comes along, and he's opposed to the central bank. And I said, oh, my God, what's this Ron Paul critter doing out here in the presidential campaign? Well, he's a marginal candidate. If he were elected, he'd be assassinated by the bankers. I mean, that's just given. And he's not going to be elected because he can't even get his message out. So he's marginalized. He was smart enough to run for president on the Republican ticket. That gets him into the presidential debates. Now, when the presidential debates come down between the Republican and the Democrat, see, that's a deal that's made up between the Republican Central Committee and the Democratic Central Committee, and it excludes all others. So libertarian candidates cannot never get in to the debates, the presidential debates, after the nominating process is completed. They can never get in. The Constitution Party, they can't get in. The Green Party, they can't get in. Ralph Nader will be excluded if he runs again. Now, I don't know if that's right or wrong or good or bad. I'm just reporting that that's the way it is. And so here in America, we have a two-party system, which is controlled by Chase Manhattan Bank. That's the bottom line. Well, you know, Chase Manhattan and ExxonMobil and Shell Oil and, you know, the big players in the game, in the pharmaceutical industry, they're the guys with 38,000 of these lobbyists running around in Washington. I figured that out for you the other day, didn't I? 38,000 lobbyists running around Washington, and we got 535 representatives. So take divided by 535, that's 71 lobbyists being paid more than the representatives and senators every year who are running around trying to influence their votes by passing out bribes. And it isn't secret. They're called campaign contributions here in the United States. You know, we wouldn't tolerate bribery in this country. I mean, my God, we're just down on bribery. But campaign contributions, that's all right. And so we don't give them bribes, we give them campaign contributions. Isn't that just real special? Now, I give you this little background over here, you know, because this is what we've been talking about. You know, how would Jesus vote for president over here? Well, how about immigration? Immigration is a big issue. We got all these Mexicans running around our country up here. I don't know how many there are. They say there's 12 million. That comes from Washington, so you know that's a lie. And so then you get some other independent guys, and they're all over the map, you know. They say, well, there's 12 million, 20 million, 30 million. Truth of the matter is, we ain't got a clue. We don't know. These are called illegal aliens, illegal people coming in the United States. It's not just Mexicans, but they make up the bulk of it. And that's because it makes sense, you know. After all, they've got a border, you know, that runs from California to Texas, you know, with us down here in the south. In case you didn't know where it was, Mexico lies to the south of the United States. I might mention that because I've reported to you in the past, when you ask high school seniors, you know, high school seniors, what country lies to the south of the United States? About half of them can't tell you. They don't know. What country lies north of the United States? About half of high school seniors, they can't tell. They don't know. That's our educational system here in the United States. So that's like asking you Germans, you know, what continent are you people on? I'll just bet you that most German kids could probably tell you by the time they get out of kindergarten that we're in Europe, but not in America. We don't stress geography here in the United States. All right, now, this thing of immigration is mentioned in the Bible, and I've been talking to you about the Bible, and all of these various and sundry issues, and I listed about 100 of them the other day. Remember that? I said immigration and unemployment and NATO and CETO and health care, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, overseas military bases, domestic military base closings, defense spending, Medicare, Medicaid, AIDS research, Alzheimer's disease, cancer research, health insurance, global warming. There's 100 of these issues out here. And the Republicans and Democrats and the Libertarians and the Greenies and Constitutionalists, you know, when you talk about global warming, you know, that's right up the alley of the Greenies and the environmental movement and so on. There are people are real concerned about glaciers melting and one thing or another. So these are all issues that they ask their presidential candidates. How do you stand on these issues, and how much tax money are you going to spend on it, and what are you going to do about it, and one thing and another. I look at this global warming thing over here, and I listen to these politicians, and these guys have got gonads like you can't believe, because Al Gore says what we got to do is we got to solve this global warming problem. That's about like saying that there's an asteroid the size of California on a collision course with Earth, and what are you going to do about it? And so, you know, some presidential candidate jump up and say, well, we're going to send a Mars probe out there, and we're loaded with a nuclear weapon and blow the thing up or something. You know, you see these disaster movies. Now, news for you, boys and girls, there's a God in heaven. There's a critter out there that says, you cannot deliver yourselves out of my hand. And I just take him at face value. He said, you ain't going to get away with this. And so I said, well, that's probably about 90% of it right there. So when Jesus was here, he didn't have a lot to say about politics. You look in the four Gospels, and he's a pretty crafty guy. You know, they ask him one day, says, well, what's your policy on the income tax? They came to him and they said, How do you stand? Should we pay taxes to the Roman Empire? See, at this time, you know, Israel, the little country, the Jews over there, they call Israel today, they were occupied by the Roman Empire. That's kind of like you Iraqis over there being occupied by the American Empire, you know, and then somebody comes along and says, well, should we follow directions from the American military? And, you know, the first guy that says no ends up in Abu Ghraib, you know. So you got to be very cautious about how you answer when you have a military occupation around your neck. And so Jesus, he was pretty crafty about the way he answered these political questions. He answered it. You know, he said, well, give me a penny and let me look at it. And he said, now whose superscription is in prose there? And they said, well, it's Caesar's. And he said, well, then render to Caesar that which is Caesar, and render to God that which is God's. And God's cut is 10%. That's the tithe. Now, if you want to tax or pay your taxes on top of that, like the Mormons, you know. Mormons are good people. They sit on the fence, and they pay their taxes to the state and their tithes to the church. Isn't that special? You owe one or the other, but you don't owe both. They pay both. I looked at that and I said, I think I'll tithe and tell the government to go to hell. That's a wild new concept. I just thought I'd share it with you. Now, immigration is a big issue over here, and the presidential candidates, they're kind of all over the map, and they've got this amnesty thing floating around, and John McCain's being criticized for immigration. What would Jesus think about immigration policy? I mean, you know, just... How would Jesus deal with 20 million Mexicans running around the country that are here illegally? What would he do with them? Fair question. What's John McCain going to do with them when he's elected president? What's Hillary Clinton going to do with them when she's elected president? I mean, there's just a couple of solutions. Either one, you round them up, send them home. Two, you kill them all. Three, don't do anything. Leave them alone. I don't know what your view is on. I'm not here to sell you a view. I just wanted to come and give you a report from the Bible as to how God dealt with immigration, dealt with foreigners and strangers and aliens in the land. All right, let's start off in Exodus chapter 23, verses 20 through 33. Just a little short period piece here. And I'll just cite, you know, three or four statements out of that section there. If you want to follow along, here's the immigration policy. Comes right out of the book of Moses, Exodus 23:20-33, just 13 verses. He starts off here, just paraphrasing, he says, you shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images. He goes on to say, I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beast of the field multiply against thee. By little and little I will drive them out from before thee, until you be increased and inherit the land. And then he says, you shall make no covenants with them, nor with their gods, and they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me, because if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you. Now that little section of scripture there is talking about the time before the Israelites went into this nation of Israel, that we call it Israel today, the promised land, and there were people already living there. You know, it's just kind of like the Jews coming back to Palestine, and there's already people living there. They're called Palestinians. And so if you're going to go into this land and you're going to take it away from these people, how should you deal with them? Now remember, Jesus had this famous statement. He says, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. He said that in Matthew 4:4. He went on in the Gospels and in the New Testament, and he made some other statements, you know, concerning stare decisis. You know, once settled, always settled. He said, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. Of course, everybody believes he came to do away with them so that we can go bed down our neighbor's wife and do away with those crazy Ten Commandments. He said he didn't, so just assuming you take him at face value, and he's the same yesterday, today, and forever, and he doesn't change, and he's still advocating today what he was advocating then. when you come into the land, you're to drive all of the native inhabitants out, and this is called sizing, S-I-E-Z-I-N-G, I believe it is, I before E, except after C, sizing title to the land. That is, unlike the Nez Perce Indians, see, we got a treaty with the Nez Perce Indians. This happened about 1876, you know, the white man comes into Idaho and there's a bunch of people already living there, called Nez Perce Indians. Now the statute says, you shall make no covenants with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me, because if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you. So instead of driving the Nez Perce Indians out of Idaho, we made a treaty with them. Well, the other day, the Nez Perce Indians called that treaty into question. And, they said, oh, by the way, we own half the water here in Idaho, so start paying us for it. And so now all you farmers up in Idaho, you got meters on your wells. As you're drawing water out of the ground, you can pay the Nez Perce because you made a treaty with them. Now, that's fair and square. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. That's what you wanted. That's what you did. But now you got to live with the consequences, and you didn't follow your instructions that you got from your creator, from your maker. Of course, our God isn't very bright anyway. He's kind of a dumbbell, and so we have to constantly go around fixing all of his mistakes. You know, the white man and his Christian God, Jesus, over here is just constantly fixing his mistakes. So, I'm just a reporter. I come along and I say, well, you know, we were told, you know, if you want to talk about the Nez Perce Indians. Now, talk about strangers in your land. There's a doctrine in the Bible that deals with strangers. Did you know that? Strangers. Those are non-Anglo-Saxon. Those are people that are non-Christians. I guess you guys call yourselves Christians. Now, Christians like to identify themselves with Jesus. And this Jesus, you know, they like to identify with the Hebrew New Testament. It's called the Greek New Testament, but, you know, he was a Hebrew. Just thought I'd point that out to you. He was a Jew, an Israelite. So if we take a look over here at the section on strangers, I've got a little section here in my Mosaic Law book on strangers, we find out that there's a way to treat strangers. And there's a way to treat the native inhabitants of the land. For instance, here, it says, you shall neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. And also, you shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, seeing you are strangers in the land of Egypt. And if a stranger sojourn with you in your land, you shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwells with you shall be unto you as one born among you. And you shall love him as yourself, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I'm the eternal your God. So right away, Christians, they get confused. They say, well, Jesus told us not to vex the strangers that are within our land. Well, that's true. But what did he tell you to do with those inhabitants when you took over the land? He told you to kill them all. Now let's go back in history here and let's figure out just exactly... Does God know how to write a book without contradicting himself? Or does he have a reason, logic, and common sense answer to this seeming dilemma here between strangers and native inhabitants, you know? We go back to 1836, and there was a piece of real estate called Texas. And in this piece of real estate called Texas, there was a bunch of people called Texans. They came up there from Mexico. And we know when you live in California, whether you're black or white or red or green, you're called a Californian. And most of the people that lived in Texas were from Mexican origin, and therefore they were Mexicans living in Texas. And it was a province or a state of Mexico, which had been founded by the Spanish. Okay. Now, there's always been some bad blood, you know, between the Spanish, who are a branch of the Israelites, and the rest of the Israelite tribes. And so, the Spanish and the Americans never got along too well together, so a bunch of Americans, that's Anglo-Saxons, from England, went down to Texas by invitation. No less, by invitation. You know, the Spanish government said, we'd like to have some immigrants come down here and settle this land called Texas, big piece of real estate. So a lot of Anglos went down there to Texas, and they were living along there all right. And then along comes a guy by the name of Santa Anna. And this guy, Santa Anna, according to the Texans, was not a very nice man. And so they rebelled against him, and they took over the piece of real estate. And they took it over for the state of Texas, and they became a sovereign, independent republic called the Republic of Texas. And the white man took over. Now, had the white men, you Texans down there, had you paid attention to your God in Exodus 23, verse 33, 32 and 33, and if you had followed this statute, you shall make no covenant with them. You do not make a treaty with the Mexican government. Like the Treaty of Guadalupe, you know, which was made after the Mexican War in 1846. Don't make any treaties with them. And with their gods, there were those people down there, all Catholics now. And those Catholics, they have a different religious ideology from the Anglo-Saxons, now the Protestants. They have a different God. They have a different program. And you were told not to make a treaty with them, nor with their gods. Okay? And then he went on to say, you shall not, they, that is, those Mexicans that you have just conquered down there, shall not dwell in your land. Lest they make you to sin against me, lest you get following after this Catholicism. For if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you. All right, now you Texans, you had a choice to make back in 1836, and you made it. And the answer was, we're going to make a treaty with the Mexicans, and we're going to allow these people to remain right here, and we're going to subjugate them and collect taxes and put them to work for us. Very logical decision. Makes all the sense in the world. But you were told not to do that. But you went ahead and did it anyway. Now today, as I speak to you, the Mexicans have now outbred you. And there are more Mexicans in Texas, that is, more minorities, not necessarily Mexicans, but more minorities than there are white men. Now, that was a dilemma that the Pharaoh recognized with our people, that is, the Israelites, in Egypt, when he said, oh my God, these Israelites over here, we got to deal wisely with them. You'll see this in Exodus chapter 1. He says, you know, these people are going to outbreed us and then vote us out of office. So they came up with a plan. They thought, well, we'll kill all the males. So that's then, you know, Moses comes on the scene, and then God comes in here, and then we have the Exodus and the Red Sea crossing, and, you know, you went to Sunday school, you heard that story. And see how that game was played? The Jews have that very same problem today. See, the Palestinians were already there in Palestine when they arrived. And what are we going to do with the Palestinians? Very simple. Kill them all. Now somebody's going to say, well, my God, Gordon, you're a lunatic fringe. I'm not either. I'm a reporter. Well, sweet Jesus wouldn't do that. He absolutely would. And that's what he told you to do. Kill them all. Let me read it to you again, in case you missed it. He said, you shall make no covenants with them, nor with their people. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto you. He said, you shall not bow down to their gods, don't practice Catholicism, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images. Now, he said, I'm going to drive these people out of here for you. There's two solutions. They can leave or die. You know, that's the two alternatives that the Apache Indians had and the Navajo Indians and everybody else living on the North American continent have. You can leave or die. Now, the white man, he likes to go out. He loves war. The white man just loves war. He likes to go out and fight and march up and down Fifth Avenue and Broadway in New York and have ticker tape parades. You know, just has a great time. But after he has conquered, he does not know how to administer. Now, that's all the white men except the English. Now, the English, now, they're a little different breed of cat. Those Englishmen over there now are probably the preeminent administrators, as evidenced by the British Empire. But the white men, and that includes the English, they've got a soft spot in their hearts. They cannot, after they have conquered this piece of real estate, they cannot go the next step and seize title to the land. They've got this gene They've got a gene in here. And it's called the carnal mind gene, and you can read about that in Romans, I think it's 8 verse 3 or something like that, or 8 verse 7. It says, the carnal mind is enmity against God, isn't subject to the law of God, and neither indeed can be. We white men, we cannot follow the law of our God. We can follow the laws of the pagan gods of all the foreigners and pagans around us. We can follow the laws of Buddha, and the laws of Allah, and the laws of Shinto. And if there's a God, no matter where he is, what he says, or what his doctrine is, we Anglo-Saxons, we can follow that one. But the laws of our God, the God Elohim, the God of Moses, you know, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we can't follow that guy. We couldn't follow him to the bathroom if we had the runs. Hey, it's halfway time here. I got to remind you, children, that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at area code 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please visit our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let's go back here and let's take a look at these the strangers versus the original occupation of the land. Remember, the stranger can't be oppressed. Now, you know, after we took the piece of real estate away from them over there, then we turned around and oppressed them. Well, that doesn't create a lot of good feelings, you know, and happiness and harmony and contentment. So, you know, you go over to Africa and you grab a bunch of these black people and you bring them over here to the United States. Now, that's a crime to do that. It's called man-stealing. Now, see, in the Bible, it's called man-stealing. And out here in the real world, we call it kidnapping. And so I think the reason that most Christians have missed this in the Bible is because they don't have the terms down. So it's called man-stealing. We went over to Africa, stole a bunch of people, brought them over here, put them to work, put them into gainful occupations in Mississippi and Alabama, chopping cotton and hoeing corn. And we thought those people ought to be real grateful to us. And they weren't. They aren't. Haven't been. Probably won't be. And they now have the vote. Vote, V-O-T-E. This is the problem, of course, that the Egyptians had back in Exodus chapter 1, and that the Jews have today with the Palestinians that you see mentioned here in the scripture, where he said, if you wanna live here, then you have to drive them out. Now, over here in Numbers 33, verses 50 through 56. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you are passed over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all of the inhabitants of the land from before you. You shall destroy all of their pictures, and destroy all of their molten images, and totally pluck down all of their high places, and you shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land, and you shall dwell therein, because I have given you the land to possess it. All right, now you Texans, hey, you Anglos out in California, did you get your marching instructions there? When you go to California, they're going to meet up with a bunch of Mexicans there. And when you get there, here's your instructions. Now, did we do that? No, we didn't. And we made a treaty, it's called the Treaty of Guadalupe. With the Mexicans, and they haven't liked that treaty from the day we imposed it upon them. Now, we were told not to do that. You shall make no covenants with them. But we did. Now, there's a prophecy over here. God told you, said, now, if you can't follow instructions, there's going to be an ultimate end to this. And you'll see it here in Deuteronomy chapter 28. About verse 43 or 4 or something like that. And I'll read it to you. Here's what's going to happen to you. He said, the stranger that is within you shall get up above you very high, and you shall come down very low. And he shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. So if you want to know what the ultimate end of California and Texas is going to be, the Mexicans are going to take them back. That's the ultimate end of it. Now, you couldn't follow instructions and do what you were told when you were told to do it. And so there's an ultimate end. Now, this is called the Great Tribulation. So I'm just here as a reporter telling you, well, okay, you were told. You didn't pay attention, so there's an end to that. Now, listen to this. Over here in the same Numbers 33, verses 50 through 56, if you got a pen and paper, jot it down, go read it. As they say in the blue room, after that dealer deals out the cards, he says, all right, boys, read them and weep. Read them and weep. Money's in the pot. Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose. Now God goes on, he says, now if you will not drive out these inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which you let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall vex you in the land wherein you dwell. And moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. That's a very important principle of law, children. Let me read that one to you again. You might have missed a couple of vital parts there. Now, here's your God. He says, number one, I want you to drive out all these Mexicans out of Texas and all these Mexicans out of California. Nothing personal now about you Mexicans. You're good guys. Good guys. But you've got an inheritance. And your inheritance is in Mexico. And that's where you belong. You black people, you've got an inheritance. And your inheritance is in Africa. And that's where you belong. And the white man has an inheritance. And the white man belongs in his inheritance. And that's where your God comes into play way back, long, long time ago. Did that way back at the Tower of Babel. And he said, you races of people, you can't live together. It's because you're going to be fighting and warring among yourselves constantly. And I need to give you a piece of real estate for yourselves. And so God, he's a segregationist. Yeah, that's right. The creator of the universe, the guy that made Adam and Eve and created all these races of people, all these races, there's only five races. He said, you different races of people, you can't live together. Now, if you children out there, you think that you can live together, you just take a look now around the world and ask yourself, how have the Jews and the Palestinians lived over the last 50 years together? In the same piece of real estate called Israel. How has that deal worked out? And you Frenchmen over there in France, now you brought in all these Muslim people, all these Arabs, from Algeria and Morocco and all around to work for you. Remember? back, you know, during the post-war boom years from about 1945 through about through probably last Friday. How's that worked out? How do the Muslims and the Frenchmen live together in Paris? And how about all those Muslims and how about all those foreigners you brought into London and all over England? How's it working out? And all those blacks that we brought in here to the United States. Boys and girls, we have nothing but race riots and race hatred. Everywhere you look in the world where you mix races, you have riots, discontent, oppression, vexation. Now let's take a look at the other side of the coin. Let's go up to Stockholm, Sweden. And when was the last race riot they had up there? How about in Oslo, Norway? Last race riot. Oh, you say, they don't have any race riots. That's right. See, those Swedes up in Stockholm, they can get along pretty well with other Swedes. And those Norwegians over in Oslo, they can get along pretty well with other Norwegians. Now, you bring up a bunch of people from Uganda and stick them in Stockholm. Bring up a bunch of people, you know, from Egypt and stick them in Oslo, Norway. And you can predictably bet that over time, somebody's going to oppress somebody else. And then pretty soon, you're going to have riots. Because when people live together of different races, different religions, different nationalities, they hate each other. Now, take a look at the Canadians. Nice guys. God love those Canadians. Now, up in Canada, they got a province up there called Quebec, and they're full of Frenchmen. And then the rest of the country are Protestants. Now, the Frenchmen are all Catholics, you know, pretty much. And the rest of the country is all Protestants, Englishmen, pretty much. And they hate each other. And they're fighting. And the English oppress the French. And the French hate the English. And they've been fighting wars for the last 200 or 300 years over that piece of real estate. Now, I'm not telling you something you haven't heard, didn't know. I'm just reporting to you. The God of creation took a look at that way back at the Garden of Eden. And for 1,656 years, he gave us a report. He said, these people over here are filled with evil. They're marrying and giving in marriage of all who they chose, or who they're choosing. And we've got interracial marriage, we've got racism, we've got riots, we've got killings, we've got cannibalism, and I'm tired of it, and so I'm gonna change that. Then he brought a big flood. And then after the flood, there were races of people, you know, that came out of the original races before the flood, carried through on Noah's Ark, you know, through his children. And these races developed, and they were building this big tower over in Babel. This is over in Baghdad. So if you people over in Iraq think that we Anglo-Saxons over here have oppressed you recently, we've been fighting with you Babylonians for the last 4,000 years. So welcome to the club. This isn't anything new. It's been going on for a long time. Anyway, God took a look at this and he said, you know, these people can't live together. And so he sorted us out. And he sent the Chinese and Orientals over to the east, and he sent the black south down to Africa, and he gave the north to the whites. And then we've had a couple of tribes or a couple of races, you know, develop out of that. You got the American Indians over here in the New World. They're a little different breed of cat. And then you got the Polynesians, you know, the guys that are down, you know, the old Aborigines down in Australia and New Zealand and out in the islands and, you know, Borneo and so on. So these five races developed separately. Now you take a look over in China. They don't have any problems over in China. Those Chinese, they can get along with another Chinaman. And the blacks down in Africa, they fight among themselves, and they kill each other, and they get along pretty well. Blacks would rather be ruled over by blacks than whites. They've made that very clear to us. The problem, children, isn't with the Orientals or with the blacks. It's with the whites. You see, we white men have a gene deficiency, or we have this wayward gene. We cannot live. White men cannot live at peace with anybody in the world, that includes all you blacks and Orientals, unless you accept our political way of life. And right now, we white men believe in democracy, and we have to go around the world spreading democracy everywhere. We want democracy in Saudi Arabia. We want democracy in Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran. We want democracy in China and North Korea. I mean, we just can't live. I'm telling you, kids, we just can't live until everybody in the world accepts our political ideology. And we will not rest until we have imposed it upon everybody in the world. It's the way the white man's been for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years, and I don't see that there's going to be any changes in it. And that causes a lot of hate and discontent. Now, to show all you people how magnanimous and altruistic we are, we have adopted a race policy here in the United States in which we have invited all you people from around the world to come here to the United States. In 1960, about 90% of us were whites. Today it's about 68% or 67. So now it's one-third all others. It's two-thirds whites and one-third all others. And so this prophecy that God gave us over here in Deuteronomy 28 is in the process of coming to pass. And now, I'm just telling you, all you blacks and Asians, sit back and relax. The white man is in the process of destroying himself. Just sit back and relax. And our God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who said these famous words, he said, "Moreover, it shall come to pass that I'm going to do unto you as I thought to do unto them." Now, what was it that he thought to do unto you? He thought to destroy you and to throw you off of the land and to give it to us. And since we wouldn't follow our God's instructions, he is going to do to us now what he thought to do to you. So sit back and relax. You don't have to do a thing. Our God's going to do the whole thing. He's going to do it to us. So, now, for the white man, that's not a very good scenario. It's not a very good outcome, but that's what we chose. That's what we wanted, and that's what we're going to get. Now, out of these debacles, there are survivors, and there are victims. It's like off the Titanic, you know, there were survivors and there were victims. And out of this great tribulation, there are going to be survivors and there's going to be victims. Now, the tragic part of it is, the bad news is, about 90% of the people in the world are going to be victims and about 10% are going to be survivors. And if you want to be in that 10%, it's going to be tricky. There are some things that you need to do. You need to get off your dead hiney and get busy and get some things done. Up front and in advance. Here's a couple of more statements. He says, "You shall not be affrighted at them, because the Eternal your God is among you, a mighty God and terrible. And the Lord your God shall put out those nations from before you little by little, that thou mayest not, consume them all at once, lest the beasts of the field increase upon you. But the Eternal your God shall deliver them unto you, and shall destroy them with a mighty destruction until they be destroyed. And he shall deliver their kings into your hand, and you shall destroy their name from under heaven." Did you hear that, children? He said, "You are to destroy their name from under heaven." Now, let's see, did we carry that one out? You people up in Seattle, do you know why your city is named Seattle? Well, there, you had an Indian chief up there, and his name was Seattle. You know, and do you know why you have totem poles in your public parks up in Alaska, and in Washington, and Oregon, and California? It's because those are the gods of the native inhabitants up there that they put on those totem poles. Now, what did our God tell us to do with the totem poles? And with the names of these foreign and alien gods and their tribal chiefs, well, he told us to destroy them from under heaven. And then what did we actually do? Well, we went out and made public parks, named our cities after their foreign and alien gods and their political chieftains, and then we put up their gods in our public parks in the form of totem poles. And children, we didn't do it just in Washington, Oregon, California. We've done it in Texas, and New Hampshire, and Vermont, and New York, and North and South Dakota. Now listen, you know, there's an end to this. There's a conclusion that comes from this. Now, your presidential candidates are out here telling you, well, let's see, we've got to have the Mexican vote in California, so they're out there in California telling you Mexicans what you want to hear. Then they go down to Texas and they tell those Texans what they want to hear. And then they go up to New Hampshire, New York, and Vermont, and North Dakota. These political candidates are out here running around the country telling all of you ethnic minorities exactly what you want to hear. All right, that's to get your vote. Now there's an ultimate end to that. And that's going to be a bad end, kids. And a bad end for all of us. Not just the blacks, not just the Mexicans, not just the whites. It's going to be a bad end for everybody. A bad end because we didn't follow instructions, didn't do what we were told, and we thought that, well, our God's pretty dumb, and so we'll fix his mistakes, and we'll come along here with a new plan called integration because it's kinder and gentler. It's kinder and gentler. That was George Bush Sr. Kind and gentle. Ah, come on. Now, you're telling me that race riots are kind and gentle, and that's the ultimate end of it. Now, it's nothing personal. You know, you Palestinians over there, it's true, you need a piece of real estate. And you need those Jews to get the hell out of your lives. And you Jews over there, you know, you need those Palestinians to get out of your lives and out of your hair so you can get on with life. But, you know, there's a way to do it and to have a success at it, and then there's our way. Now, God told us, this is the Creator. Now, I'm not talking about the Pope. I'm not talking about Catholicism and Protestantism and Judaism. I'm talking about the Creator of the universe. Now, he gave us a way. He said, now listen, this is the way this deal's got to be done. If you're going to have five races of people in the world, those five races of people can't live down the street and on the same block in the same cul-de-sac in the same neighborhood with one another. That ain't going to work. And he told us that. And so he gave China to the Chinese, and the white man went over there and raped, robbed, and pillaged and took Macau and Hong Kong, and then turned half the population into drug addicts over there and dominated them. The Chinese haven't forgotten that, and they didn't like it then. They don't like it now, and ain't going to like it in the future. And the Chinese don't like white people. And I can't say that I blame them. And the same thing is true with the Mexicans, and the same thing is true with the blacks. You know, the white man has not made himself endeared to anybody anywhere in the world, and that includes the Iraqis and the Afghanistans. Now, Americans, it isn't just you, it's the white man in general. He's unable to live on planet Earth with people of other colors and other gods and other racial extremes or racial differences. Unless they all subscribe to the same political ideology that we do. And we just can't live in peace until we have given those people all the benefits of democracy. And that's going to come to a no good end. It's about time we learned how to butt out and mind our own business. But that is not the white man's gene. The white man's gene is Butinsky. We are Butinskys. We cannot live without butting in to everybody else's business. And that includes Mexico, Latin America. I mean, if you want to know why the white man is hated, why Americans are hated around the world, it's not George Bush and the Bush policy. George Bush is just the end of a long train of these abuses that have been going on. Take a look at the Hawaiians, for instance. And we went over to Hawaii, overthrew their government. You know, those Hawaiians were living before the white man got there. Did you know that? Yeah, it's true. Those Hawaiians were out there living on them islands out there for hundreds of years, thousands of years before the white man ever knew that they were there. They were getting along fine, doing their own thing, minding their own business. White man shows up and says, this is a good place to grow pineapple. This is a good place to build a Navy base. So we overthrew their government in 1893 and subjected them to the white man's rule. Now, for all of you Hawaiians out there, let me tell you how this is going to come down. You Hawaiians, I'm talking about all of you, white, black, oriental. The Hawaiians out there and the Japanese are ultimately going to take over. And when they do, there will not be a living white man left in those islands. They will kill every white man that draws breath. If you're white living in the Hawaiian Islands, remember my words. There will be no survivors. The Japanese will never forget Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the Hawaiians are never going to forget the overthrow of their government in 1893. They hate you with a blind purple passion. Oh, they smile at you. when you're in political control, they're smiling at all you white guys over there in Hawaii. Wait until the turtle turns, and then there'll be no whites left alive. I got that directly from a Hawaiian over there. I was in a meeting one time, and he said, let's kill all the Howleys. That's what they call us over there, Howleys. Let's kill all the Howleys. But we won't kill Gordon until after we find out what he knows. And I looked at my wife, and she looked at me. I said, I don't think these people like us. Not that I can blame them. Now, over here in Deuteronomy 9, verses 1 through 29, there's a little section in here. I marked it in yellow. He says, speak not thou in your heart after that the Eternal your God has cast them out from before you, saying, for my righteousness the Eternal has brought me in to possess this land of Texas and California. Boys and girls, God did not give us Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, and Colorado, Nevada, because we were righteous. And he just told you that. He said, don't say in your heart it's for our righteousness, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Eternal does drive them out from before you. Not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart do you go in to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Eternal your God does drive them out from before you, and that he may perform the word which he swore unto your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Eternal your God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for your righteousness, because you are a stiff-necked people. Translated into modern English, you're a bunch of horses, patooties. And you've always been that way, and you probably always will be. But I'm going to give you this piece of real estate because I promised it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now follow instructions. Now, these people that are here are strangers. Now when you're dealing with a stranger, that's a foreigner and an alien, and he is to obey, to practice the Ten Commandments and all of the laws that our God gave us to practice. Well, boys and girls, if we don't practice the Ten Commandments, why would we expect the Mexicans and the blacks to practice the Ten Commandments? Now, the foundation that we built this whole piece of trash on is sand in the extreme, and it isn't going to fly very far. If Jesus were here, the immigration policy would be to drive all of them out, period. And, of course, with a policy like that, how can you possibly be elected president of the United States? So I'm afraid Jesus doesn't need to run for president because you're not going to vote for him. And that's why. All right, kids, we got to leave it right there. We're about out of time, so I'm going to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm out of time. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.